everyone, and welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're going to be diving into something that might not sound super exciting at first.
Yeah.
Property insurance. But
right.
Trust me, this is knowledge that can save you a ton of headaches and maybe even some cash down the road. We're going to be using a chapter from a property and casualty insurance textbook to break it all down.
You know, it's funny. Most people only think about insurance when something bad happens.
Yeah.
But that's actually the worst time to be learning about it.
Exactly. It's like trying to read the instruction manual while your house is on fire.
Yeah.
Not very helpful. So we're getting ahead of the game today, learning the basics so you're prepared.
I like to think of it as preventative medicine.
Okay.
But for your finances.
I love that. Okay, first things first. What exactly is property insurance protecting?
Well, the name kind of gives it away. It's about protecting your property. But the cool thing is, property isn't just your house. It can be split into two categories, real property and personal property.
Mm. So real property is the stuff that's like literally part of the real estate, right? My house, the garage, maybe even a fence.
That's right. Things that are fixed in place.
Okay.
And then personal property is all the stuff you'd take with you if you move furniture, clothes, electronics, even that weird collection of ceramic frogs you love so much.
Okay, so it's not just about the building itself. It's about everything that makes it your space.
Exactly. And both types of property can represent significant investments. So insuring them is key.
Now, this is where I always get a little confused. Are there different ways to actually insure these things?
Absolutely. There's scheduled coverage, where you specifically list out high-value items and their estimated worth, like a piece of jewelry or a rare painting. This gives you more targeted protection for those really special items.
It makes sense. So it's like an extra layer of security for your most prized possessions.
Right. Then there's blanket coverage, which provides a single limit for a whole category of items, like all the contents of your house. This is more general, but it covers a wider range of everyday belongings.
Okay. That's making more sense now. But what about the amount of coverage I actually have? How do I know if it's enough?
That brings us to the concept of policy limits. This is the maximum amount your insurance company will pay if you have a covered loss.
So let's say a tree falls on my roof and causes $10,000 in damage, but my policy limit is only $5,000. Does that mean I'm stuck paying the other $5,000 myself?
Unfortunately, yes. That's why understanding your policy limits is so important. You need to make sure they align with the value of your property and your potential risks.
Okay, noted. I'm definitely going to be checking my policy limits after this deep dive. Now, let's talk about what actually triggers these insurance claims. I know they're called perils, right?
Right. Perils are the actual causes of loss, the things that can go wrong and damage your property. And you'd be surprised by the sheer variety of perils that insurance policies cover.
I bet. We're probably talking fire, theft, storms. What else?
You've got the basics down.
Yeah.
But it can get even more specific, like damage from hail, a plane crashing into your house, or even rioting and civil commotion.
Whoa. I never even considered those. But it makes sense. All those things could cause serious damage. So how does insurance differentiate between all these different types of perils?
That's where open peril and named peril coverage come in. Open peril is the most comprehensive.
Okay.
It covers pretty much any peril you can imagine, except for a few specific exclusions that are clearly spelled out in the policy.
So it's like a safety net that catches almost anything unless it's specifically forbidden.
Exactly. On the other hand, a named peril policy only covers the specific perils that are listed in the policy. If a peril isn't named, you're not covered.
So if I have a named peril policy and a meteor crashes through my roof, which hopefully will never happen, but let's just say it does, am I out of luck?
Most likely, yes, unless meteor strikes happen to be specifically listed as a covered peril in your policy.
Right.
Which, let's be honest, is probably not very common.
Okay, that makes open peril sound pretty tempting, but I imagine it probably costs more, right?
You're catching on. Open peril does tend to be pricier because it offers broader protection. But that doesn't mean it's always the best option for everyone. It really depends on your individual needs and risk tolerance.
And this might be a good time to talk about the different levels of coverage. I know there's basic, broad, and special, but what do those actually mean in practice?
Think of it like this. Basic coverage is like your standard cup of coffee.
Okay.
It gets the job done, but is no frills. Broad coverage is like adding a shot of flavor, giving you a bit more protection.
Right.
And then special coverage, that's your all-out whipped cream-topped caramel drizzle masterpiece.
Right. I'm definitely craving a fancy coffee now.
Yep.
But I get the analogy. So basic coverage would be for the most common perils.
Right. It covers fire, lightning, explosions, the kind that make you jump out of your skin. not the controlled demolition kind. And it also includes what's called extended coverage.
Ooh, extended coverage sounds intriguing. What does that add to the mix?
It protects you from external forces, things that could damage your property from the outside. Think wind, hail, damage from aircraft, even riots or civil commotion.
Wow, that's quite a range. I can see why they call it extended coverage.
And then broad coverage builds on that by adding protection from things that could go wrong inside your property.
So like burst pipes, a leaky roof, that kind of thing.
Exactly. It covers damage from water, ice, snow, falling objects, even electrical issues.
Okay, so basic is your essential protection. Broad adds a layer of security for both internal and external problems. And then special is the ultimate peace of mind coverage.
You got it. And just to be clear, special coverage is the same thing as open peril. It's designed to cover pretty much anything that's not specifically excluded.
Now, you mentioned exclusions a couple of times. This is where insurance gets a little tricky, right? Even with the most comprehensive coverage, there are still some things that aren't covered.
Unfortunately, yes. Even with the best insurance policies, there are always going to be some exceptions. It's like that saying, no rule without an exception.
Okay, so what are some common exclusions I should be aware of?
Well, it really depends on the specific policy and the insurance company. But some frequent ones involve damage from earthquakes or floods, things that are considered acts of God and require separate types of coverage.
Right.
You might also see exclusions for damage caused by neglect or intentional acts.
So if I leave a window open during a rainstorm and my furniture gets ruined, the insurance company might say, sorry, that's on you.
Exactly. That's why it's so important to read your policy carefully and understand what is and isn't covered. Don't just assume you're protected for everything, because that's rarely the case.
I think this is a good place to pause for a moment. We've covered a lot of ground already. We've talked about the different types of property, the different ways to insure them, the concept of policy limits, the crazy world of perils, and even the importance of reading those pesky exclusions.
Yeah.
But there's still so much more to explore.
There is. We still need to dive into how losses are actually valued, what that whole coinsurance thing is all about, and how third parties can get involved in your insurance claims.
All right, folks, we're just getting warmed up. Stay tuned for more property insurance insights after a quick break. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Before the break, we were talking about all the wild and wacky things that can happen to your property.
And how insurance can help protect you from those unexpected events.
Right. But what happens when something does go wrong and you need to file a claim? How does the insurance company actually figure out how much to pay you? I imagine it's not as simple as just saying, hey, my stuff got wrecked, give me money.
You'd think so, right? But there's actually a whole process for determining the value of your loss.
Right.
It's called loss valuation, and it can get a little complicated.
Okay, hit me with the basics. What are the different ways my loss could be valued?
One of the most common methods is actual cash value, or ACV.
Okay.
This takes depreciation into account, meaning they factor in how much your stuff has naturally worn out over time.
So if my 5-year-old couch gets ruined, I'm not going to get enough to buy a brand new couch.
Probably not. You'll get what that couch is worth today, not what you paid for 5 years ago.
That makes sense, but it also seems a bit unfair. What if I can't actually afford to replace my old couch with a new one at today's prices?
That's a valid concern, and it's one of the downsides of ACV. But it's important to remember that insurance is about restoring you to the financial position you were in before the loss, not necessarily about giving you a brand new upgrade.
Okay, I see the logic there. So what are my other options if I want to avoid that depreciation hit?
Well, that's where replacement cost coverage comes in.
Okay.
With this, the insurance company will pay you the amount it actually costs to replace the damaged item with a brand new one of similar kind and quality without deducting for depreciation.
So if I go with replacement cost, I could actually get a shiny new couch if my old one bites the dust.
Exactly. You'd get enough to go out and buy a comparable replacement at today's prices.
That sounds much better. But I'm guessing replacement cost coverage probably comes with a higher price tag.
It does. But for many people, that extra peace of mind is worth the additional cost.
Right.
It's all about weighing the potential risks and benefits.
Okay, so we've got ACV and replacement cost.
Uh-huh.
Are there any other ways my losses could be valued?
There are a couple more specialized methods. One is called functional replacement cost. This is used when it's not possible or practical to replace something with an exact replica.
So, like, if my house has antique stained glass windows that get damaged, they probably don't make those anymore.
Exactly. With functional replacement cost, they'd replace them with modern windows that serve the same function but might not look exactly the same.
That's practical, but it would be hard to say goodbye to those beautiful antique windows.
It would. But sometimes you have to make those tough choices when balancing historical preservation with practicality.
Okay, what other valuation methods are there?
There's market value, which is basically what your property would sell for in the current market. But this isn't used very often in insurance because market values can fluctuate so much.
Right. It would be hard to pin down a precise value based on something that's always changing.
Exactly. And then there are two methods that are specifically for items that are hard to put a price tag on. Agreed value and stated amount.
Okay, those sound interesting. Tell me more.
Agreed value is used for things like antiques, fine art, or other unique items where there's no easy way to determine their market value. You and the insurance company basically agree on a value up front, and that's what they'll pay out if the item is lost or damaged.
So it's like a pre-negotiated price tag for those one-of-a-kind treasures.
Exactly. Then there's stated amount, which is kind of like a hybrid between agreed value and ACV. You state a value for the item, but the insurance company will only pay the lesser of that amount or the actual cash value at the time of loss.
So if I overestimate the value of my stuff, I might not get the full amount I stated.
That's right. It's important to be realistic when stating the value of your belongings.
This is a lot to take in. I can see why people get confused about insurance. There are so many different ways to approach coverage and valuation. It's like a choose your own adventure book, but with your finances.
It's true. But having a basic understanding of these concepts can really empower you to make informed decisions about your coverage.
Absolutely. Now let's talk about something that always makes my head spin. Co-insurance. It sounds like a complicated math problem.
It can seem that way, but at its core, co-insurance is a way to encourage people to insure their property to at least 80% of its value.
Why 80%? Is that some magic number in the insurance world?
It's a threshold that helps ensure people have enough coverage to adequately protect their assets. If you insure your property for less than 80% of its value, you might not get fully reimbursed for a partial loss. Instead, the insurance company will apply a penalty.
Okay, that doesn't sound good. Can you give me an example of how that penalty would work?
Sure. Let's say your house is worth $400,000. Yep. To meet the 80% coinsurance requirement, you should have at least $320,000 in coverage.
Okay.
But let's say you only have $240,000. Then a storm comes through and causes $40,000 in damage to your roof.
Ouch, that's a huge repair bill.
It is. But because you didn't meet the 80% threshold, the insurance company won't pay the full $40,000.
Mm-hmm.
They'll apply a penalty based on how much coverage you should have had.
So how much would they actually pay in this case?
They would divide the amount of coverage you did have, $240,000, by the amount you should have had, $320,000.
Oh, okay.
That gives you 0.75. Then they multiply that by the amount of loss, $40,000, which gives you a payout of only $30,000.
So even though the damage was $40,000, I'd be stuck paying $10,000 out of pocket because I skimped on my coverage.
Exactly. That's why understanding coinsurance is so important.
Right.
It can really impact how much you end up paying in the event of a loss.
Okay, lesson learned. I'm definitely going to be double checking my coverage limits and that 80% rule. Now let's move on to something that might seem a little less intimidating. Vacancy and unoccupancy. I know these terms have to do with whether someone is actually living in the property, but what's the difference? And why does it matter to the insurance company?
Those are great questions. It might seem like a minor detail, but the distinction between vacancy and unoccupancy can actually have a huge impact on your coverage.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Break it down for me.
A vacant property is completely empty. No people, no furniture, no personal belongings.
Yeah.
It's like a blank slate.
So like a house that's up for sale and has been completely emptied out.
Exactly. An unoccupied property means no one is currently living there, but their belongings are still in the house.
So like if I go on vacation for a few weeks, my house is unoccupied but not vacant.
Precisely. Now the reason this matters to insurance companies is that vacant properties are considered higher risk.
Why is that? It seems like a vacant house would be less likely to have something happen since there's no one there to accidentally start a fire or leave the water running.
That's a good point, but vacant properties are more vulnerable to things like vandalism, theft, and even squatters.
I see. Those risks wouldn't really apply to a house that's still full of someone's stuff and just temporarily empty.
Exactly. So many insurance policies have clauses that limit or exclude coverage for certain perils if a property is left vacant for an extended period, usually more than 60 days.
So if I'm planning on leaving my house empty for a few months, I should definitely check my policy and maybe even talk to my insurance agent about my options.
Absolutely. It's always better to be safe than sorry. Now let's shift gears one last time and talk about something called third-party provisions.
Third-party provisions? That sounds a bit mysterious. Who are these third parties and what do they have to do with my insurance?
Third-party provisions are clauses in an insurance policy that protect the interests of people or organizations who have a financial stake in your property, even though they're not the named insured on the policy.
So, like, the bank that holds my mortgage. They have a vested interest in making sure my house doesn't burn down.
Exactly. And that's where the standard mortgage clause comes in. It ensures that the mortgage lender is protected in case of a covered loss, even if you, the homeowner, do something that would normally void your coverage.
Like accidentally setting the kitchen on fire while trying to deep fry a turkey? Not that I've ever done that, of course.
We've all been there. But seriously, even in cases of negligence or intentional acts by the insured, the mortgage lender would still be paying out up to their insurable interest in the property.
So the bank can breathe easy knowing their investment is protected no matter how bad my cooking skills are.
Exactly. There are also other types of third-party provisions. There's the loss payable clause, which is similar to the mortgage clause but applies to personal property like cars or boats. It protects the lender who financed those purchases.
So if I total my car, the lender who gave me the auto loan will still get their money, even if I was at fault.
That's right. These provisions are all about protecting the financial interests of everyone involved.
Okay, that makes sense. Are there any other third-party provisions I should know about?
There's one more that's pretty important. The no benefit to Bailey clause.
Okay, Bailey. That's a new one. What exactly is a Bailey?
A Bailey is simply someone who has temporary possession of your property. Think dry cleaners, storage facilities, or even your neighbor who's watching your dog while you're out of town.
So it's anyone who's holding on to my stuff for a while.
Exactly. The no benefit to Bailey clause clarifies that these Baileys aren't covered under your insurance policy while they're holding your belongings. They would need their own insurance to cover any losses or damage that occur while your property is in their care.
So if I take my wedding dress to the dry cleaner and it gets damaged, I can't file a claim with my insurance company.
That's right. The dry cleaner would be responsible for covering the loss under their own insurance policy.
That's a good reminder to always ask about insurance coverage anytime I leave my valuable belongings with someone else.
Absolutely. It's a simple step that can save you a lot of headaches down the road.
Welcome back to the deep dive. Before we went to the previous part, we were talking about all the interesting things involved with third-party provisions in insurance policies.
Yes, these clauses can seem a bit hidden, but they're crucial for understanding how insurance protects not just you, but also others with a financial interest in your property.
Right. Like we were saying, it's not just about my peace of mind if my house burns down. It's also about the bank who gave me the mortgage knowing they'll be covered too.
That's a great way to put it. It highlights how insurance acts as a safety net for the whole financial system, not just individuals.
This whole conversation has made me realize that insurance is way more complex and interesting than I ever gave it credit for.
It really is. And we've only just scratched the surface today. There are so many layers to explore, from the history of insurance to the psychology of risk perception.
I bet we could do a whole deep dive just on the weirdest things people have tried to insure.
Oh, absolutely. There are some truly bizarre stories out there. But for today, I think we've given our listeners a solid foundation in the fundamentals of property insurance.
Agreed. We've covered everything from the basic types of property to the complexities of coinsurance, perils, exclusions, loss valuation, and those all-important third-party provisions. My brain is officially full.
Mine too. But hopefully it's full of useful information that will help our listeners make informed decisions about their own insurance coverage.
Absolutely. But as with any deep dive, the learning doesn't stop here. This episode has given you a solid foundation, but there's always more to explore.
And that's where the real fun begins. Now that you have a grasp of the fundamentals, you can start asking more nuanced questions, doing your own research, and tailoring your insurance strategy to your unique needs and circumstances.
Right. Maybe you're renting an apartment and want to learn more about renter's insurance. Or maybe you're a homeowner who's concerned about floods, earthquakes, or other specific risks. There are so many resources available to help you navigate the insurance landscape.
And one of the best resources is a qualified insurance professional. Don't be afraid to reach out to an agent or broker and ask questions. They can provide personalized guidance and help you find the coverage that's right for you.
Exactly. They're like the insurance Sherpas guiding you through the treacherous mountains of policy jargon and legalese.
I like that analogy. They can help you avoid those hidden pitfalls and ensure you're well protected.
So to our listeners, here's your takeaway challenge. Go check your current insurance policies. See if they align with what we've talked about today. And if you have any questions or concerns, don't hesitate to reach out to a professional for advice.
Knowledge is power. And when it comes to insurance, that power can save you a lot of money and stress down the line.
Couldn't have said it better myself. Well, that concludes our deep dive into the fascinating world of property insurance. We hope you've enjoyed the journey and learned something valuable along the way.
And remember, stay curious, keep learning, and never underestimate the importance of protecting the things that matter most.
Thanks for joining us on the deep dive.